This is Michael L. Jones with the Unfair Housing Oral History Project that's being conducted by the Metro Housing Coalition and the University of Louisville Oral History Center. It is December 31st, 2021, at 3 o'clock, and I'm talking to Mr. Ron Lewis, who is a resident of the Shavley neighborhood, I believe. Would this be considered Shavley?
Yes, it is. This is the Shavley area.
And how long have you lived here?
45 years.
Wow. So when you first moved to this area, was it still majority white neighborhood?
Yes, sir. It definitely was majority of a white neighborhood. When we first moved here, our kids was like 1 year old, 2 years old, things of that nature. And it was basically on this street right here where I am now. Uh-huh. It was about two black families. All the rest of it was Caucasian families.
Uh-huh. And so what's your street called?
1730 Kennedy Road.
Okay.
Like John F., this is Kennedy Road.
Okay, and so how did you come to move to this area?
Well, I grew up right around the corner from here, about six blocks, in a housing project.
LaSalle?
No, Carter Home.
Oh, can you?
Carter Home. I'm Carter Home South.
Oh, okay.
And so I've known about this area most of my life. So I'm of all the running I've done, I'm right back in the circle, right back in the same area. Basically, I grew up here, so I knew about the Shavley area.
Uh-huh. And so, Shavley, at one time, was famous for being not really wanting black people in the neighborhood. So, were there any concerns when you relocated?
Yes, my wife had a hard time selling me on the idea of moving into Shavley because of what you just said. And so I said, well, you know, I'm going to be a little liberal thinking and I'll take the chance. But I told her back then I was not going to move deep into Shavley. So as you see where we are right now, we're not deep into Shavley. It's almost the beginning of Shavley. The beginning of Shavley is about two blocks going this way. So that's how that became.
Okay. So you say you grew up in Cotter Homes.
Yes, sir.
So what year were you born?
I was born in 1950.
Okay.
So I'm one of the original brick babies. As we were called back when that phrase became popular, I grew up in Cotter Home, and that was all I was known was living in a housing project. And when I got older and went to the Navy and things, I used my GI Bill when we came out. That's how we got the house here. And end up moving where you sitting at right now.
Mm-hmm. So what was Cotter Homes like when you were growing up?
Oh, it was great. It was great. It was a home, a residence for lower income people, as you probably know. And I mean, we had everything. It's funny, I always tell people this. I didn't know we were poor until President John F. Kennedy came up with that diagram, that map that showed middle class, upper middle class, and lower class. So one day I saw it on television, and I said, "Mama, look, we poor." You know, we had us in between it. So because everybody around us had the same thing. They were nice buildings. I mean, you know, they had hot running water and flush toilets and sinks and things of that nature. So I had no problem. I'm glad I grew up. I am very glad that I grew up in a housing project that had all these elements, because I later found out that some of my friends grew up in houses, shanties houses, shotgun houses, you know, straight through, boom, no running water, no toilets, no tubs. And so I have no complaint. I'm one of the original brick babies.
Okay, so the houses, there were houses around Cotter Homes that didn't have any utilities?
I'm going to say 55, I went to Duval Junior High School and on Bourne Avenue. across the street from Duval back then, there was still big open fields, and there was little houses, like I say, and they didn't have no running water, no toilets and things like that. And there was a bunch of little houses back during those times. It was I had been there for a long time, and hadn't been for I don't think it was urban renewal. I don't know what it was, but they'd have probably still been there. And families with goats, chickens, and pigs, and things, and things of that nature.
Okay, so what was the community like in Cogger Home?
It was a great community. It was a real community. People cared about each other. There was none of this killing and robbing and stealing and all that stuff. If it was, it was just a very small amount than it is today.
Mm-hmm.
People took care of their yards and kept the grass cut, raised pretty flowers. They would jump on you if you was in somebody's yard playing. Get out of that boy. Get out of that yard, boy. You know, you're supposed to be playing in Mr. Thompson's yard. Things of that nature. They had pride
mm-hmm.
in their surroundings. We were low and poor in income. That was our status, but we had pride,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't think we have that too much today, as you see with all this stuff that's going on. So that was it was I enjoyed it. If I had to do it again, I'd love to do it again and grow up again in a housing project.
Yeah. Well, so were you living in the projects when you start playing music?
Yes, I started about 9 years old, and I was living in Cotter Home. 3252 Duval Drive, Building 10. That's where I grew up at. And I've had, you know, how you go to school. You know, I was in the chorus in school. And you meet people that sing and try to play instruments and things of that nature. So I started with a guitar that my mother told me don't touch. My mother had a boyfriend, and he was going to be a guitar player. And he always would put the guitar underneath my mother's bed and tell me and my sister, don't mess with my guitar. Well, you know where that went, don't you?
Yeah.
So soon they disappeared and got away and da-da-da-da. I was under the bed pulling out the guitar, picking it, trying to get a note or a tune. And I did that for so long till one day they caught me.
Mm.
And what they lacked, what they heard, because it seemed like I was going to end up being a guitarist, which I am a guitarist now.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because I was told not to. And you know how kids are. When you tell them don't do that, you might as well give them an invitation to do that. So that's how I ended up being a guitar player, because I was not supposed to be messing with that guitar.
Mm-hmm. So were you playing music around in bands when you were still a youngster?
I met other guys and girls in that area who was singing. Back then, we had a bunch of singing groups. Every corner in the West End, I know, had a singing group and a dance group. You know, it wasn't all the fighting and, like I say, shooting and things. There was some shooting, some fighting, but not just 3 and 4 shooting like we have today. And you've heard on TV and seen in the newspaper. We would take it to the stage, so you mm-hmm. thought she was bad. Well, my group and your group is going to dance, have a dance-off.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night at different places like Harris Recreation Center down in Cotter Home, where it was a big recreation center. St. George's Recreation Center. And that's how we just, you know, had our disputes and solved our disputes.
Yeah. Everybody, what was St. George at?
Oh, that's on Ormsby Street.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken, it's still there. It's right across the street from one of the W.P. Porter
mm-hmm.
funeral homes. So that's how we solved our problems and things of that nature. Everybody had a group. I had a group. One of the first groups that I was in, we called ourselves the Dynamic Imperials.
Mm-hmm.
It was 5 of us, and we sung and danced, and I went and got my guitar and started learning how to play some of these songs that you hear on the radio, you know, old stuff by James Brown and the Four Tops and, oh my God, just so many people I can name, but that's how that happened.
Okay, so how long did you live in Cogger Homes?
We were down there about maybe 10, 11 years. I was thinking about that today. I said about 10, at least 10 or 11 years, we was in Carter Home. Then I left after school and went to the Navy. I enjoyed it. Everything I learned about women and music and camaraderie and getting along with someone was introduced to me while being a housing member in Carter Home.
So when you went to the Navy, where were you stationed? Where'd you go training?
U.S. Naval training Great Lakes. Mm-hmm. I trained in the Great Lakes in November. Boy, you don't want to go to Great Lakes in November. It was so cold, it seemed like you were just standing with no clothes on a window. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Great Lakes is where I was trained at. And then after graduating from the Navy, and I went on to, they put me on a ship. I was on the USS Wichita, AOR-1, which stands for Ammunition, Oiler, and Replenisher. We was a floating gas station. Our job was to go out to sea and refer ships that needed oil, gas, and something called black gunpowder. Mm-hmm. That was what ship that I was on.
So what year would it have been that you were in the you served in the Navy?
From 68 to 72.
Okay. And did you live on base or?
No, I lived on the ship. We stayed once you get assigned to the ship, that's your home, operation area, office, and the whole bit. So I was on the USS Wichita, and I enjoyed it. It's an experience I'll never forget. And it was very exciting.
And so when you left the Navy, did you come back to Louisville?
Yes. When I left the Navy, I came back home. I think kids, young men, get homesick when you go to the military. It's like going away to college sometimes. You know, you always end up basically 90% come back home. So I came on back home, and back then the jobs was kind of plentiful. So I landed a job at GE, General Electric. Uh-huh. Landed a job out there. But I didn't stay long at GE. I ended up going to another job that was called CAC, Community Action Commission. Uh-huh. I worked for CAC for years. I was one of the first young field workers out in the field talking to people about food stamps, housing. I've been in this movement a long time. Mm-hmm. Food stamps, housing, child care. It was a program implemented by President John F. Kennedy to eradicate and to eliminate poverty. Mm-hmm. So I was in that program, and that was something I wish I was into now because, you know, we didn't eliminate poverty, I don't think.
Yeah. So what were some of the housing issues that you were dealing with?
Housing was, back then, as probably is now, it was just bad housing here in Kentucky. People's people needed housing worse then, I think they do now. Like I said, the running water, things of that nature. It's nothing new that they don't have it. Everybody doesn't have running water in their home as of the day. It's, you know, this is 2000 and soon to be 2, am I right? Everybody does not have running water in their homes. So the housing problem in the state of Kentucky and around the world, I presume, has been kind of a bad situation. I've been to the Appalachian parks. I've been down to Pikeville areas. And I've been all over the world 3 times. And the housing has been a problem. I'm glad to see some people working on it and talking about it, and let's stay on it because it's very, very needed. Mm-hmm. You know, good housing. Everybody deserves a decent place to live.
So when you were going around with your job, were you mostly in the West End or were you all over the city?
The Community Action Commission was all over the state of Kentucky. I was assigned basically in the West End. I was in the Russell area. I was a neighborhood Russell worker. They kept me up there about maybe about 5 years, and we would go house to house and talk to the people about the social problems, getting on food stamps, and employment, housing naturally. And then I went down to Park Duval, mm-hmm. got transferred down to the Park Duval area. I was down there when they first opened up Park Duval. They took two of the old buildings that were Carter Home, building one and two, and turned them into Park Duval. Mm-hmm. And that's where that started at. And that was a lovely time, meeting people that was, you know, on and upward, that was trying to do things and things of that nature. And it was just
so, like the culture of the housing project was similar to when you were growing up then.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it hadn't that much changed. We've had people come through the ranks, politicians, talking and promising to do something. But sometimes, I understand it takes a little time and money. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't seem like all this appears as fast as it should.
Mm-hmm. And so, what were some of the issues that the people in the places that you worked here would talk to you about? What were their complaints about the neighborhood?
Well, the complaints about the neighborhoods is, well, they had a bunch of derelicts and drunks hanging around in there because it was unemployment. Mm-hmm. Unemployment was high. It just wasn't a lot of jobs that some of them people had. So they would be in the street. There's always been people in the street, day and night, night and day, hustling, trying to sell this, trying to sell that. Trying to steal this, trying to steal what you got, excuse me, and sell it to someone else. So the unemployment, theft, things of that nature, wasn't no gang problem. But wasn't no gang problem. Just an unemployment, the theft, and the drug was just getting introduced basically here in Kentucky. Now around another bigger places like Chicago, New York, they had the heroin and the smack and all that stuff. This was, Kentucky was basically marijuana because we grow it pretty good here. So, but it wasn't it wasn't ran away. The government, someone introduced all that heavy drug stuff to the people in Kentucky. It was no accident.
Mm-hmm. So you think like towards the end of the 70s and the 80s when crack came in and stuff is when you noticed the change?
I remember when crack hit basically here in the United States and basically in Kentucky. You know, people, kids that I grew up with got strung out and got hung up and things of that nature. It was a terrible time and it probably still is. They didn't, you know, feel like they was going to be left out, so they wanted to be hip. Mm-hmm. So they started using crack and crank and heroin just swept the nation like a rat poison. Mm-hmm. It was pitiful.
So after you were at your job for 5 years doing that, then what'd you do?
I went to I left town for a while with a band. Uh-huh. Yeah, I did. I left town for a while with a band and we toured around and messed around with musicians on the road here and there and there and here, things of that nature. Then I came back and got married. I've been married twice. This is my second marriage that I'm on now. The first marriage is where my son came from, Keith Lewis.
Yeah, what year was it that you got
married? He's born here, 1972.
And where'd you live then?
At this point, I was up, I had left and went up on Beach Street, 1419 Beach. A friend of mine had his parents had a 13-room house. We know back in the day they had those big old houses. You know, if you had four or five kids and six, seven, you know, you have big old houses. So I moved up that way and took me to another part of town. And that's where I became really, you know, on my own and things of that nature.
Where is Beach located? What
Beach part? Is in the West End on the southern side of town. That's about all I can say. It's Beach Street. It's a very nice, it was and still is a very nice black community of hard-working people, families, mothers and fathers and kids. It was by a company called Anderson's Wood Factory. I think the wood factory is still over there, but that's vicinity where Beach Street is.
Uh-huh. And so were you renting a room?
The man that had the house, he had one or two of his kids grown up and leave, which left an empty room. So I rented a room from him. 1419B, about 13 or 14 room houses. Back in them days, they had them old mansions that people had moved out of. They just turned them into apartment houses.
And so were there other houses like that on the street?
Oh, yes, sir. There was a bunch of well kept up. At one time, people kept their houses looking good. Painted up, good shrubbery, landscaping. They, like I say, they had pride in what they owned. They didn't just let it go and say, No, that's that little bit that they owned, and they kept it up.
Mm-hmm. So did you stay there after you got married?
Yeah, we stayed there. Oh, we stayed there. I think about two or three years. And then we moved on a street called Magazine. Mm-hmm. Moved up by Chestnut Street here in Louisville. Mm-hmm. We stayed up there for a while, and then we just kind of like went to different places after, you know. We started getting older, jobs started getting a little bit better. My wife during that time worked at Blue Cross Blue Shield. Mm-hmm. And I was still downtown in the West End working for Community Action. So I was in the inner city doing the street thing, which I still love. I guess that's where I got my thing about passing out flyers and talking to the people, meeting with the people. I still love it. I wish I was doing it now, like I say. I think it's more needed now than it was back then because of where things are since we're there.
So you were, you lived on Magazine Street, and were you living in a house where you
I was renting a house with a lady named Miss Johnson, who owned about four or five houses on that street. And my auntie was a friend of hers, excuse me, and they let me rent a house. That's where we were at for quite a while, which is across the street from Elliott Park. Now, if anyone knows where Elliott Park is in the West End, that's the area where Magazine. So we stayed up there for a while. Everything was great. I was a young man, young wife, baby. And it's something else.
Okay, and then where'd you move after Magazine?
Oh, I see, that's Magazine.
Yeah, go
ahead. After Magazine, went out to the, you got me going. Southside Drive.
Oh, so you moved to South End?
Yeah. I lived, by Nave Ordnance. It was nice area. It was quiet and, mostly, it was still mostly blacks and white out there. So we moved out that way on Washington Park Apartments. Stayed at the Washington Park. It was a nice area. I liked that area. It was different for me to be around people, that was still trying to progress and do things with a lot of fussing and cussing and shooting, all that kind of stuff. So it was a different time.
So was that the first time you lived in like an integrated neighborhood?
Yes, sir. That was the first time. And it was a good time. It made me see the difference between being in an all-black neighborhood and living in an integrated neighborhood. I mean, it was just obvious there was a slight difference in people carrying themselves and things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, do you think it was a more positive or a negative
difference? It was positive, very, very, very positive. Because first of all, they had jobs out that way. And a man and a woman could go get a decent job if he or she so desired. And had to carry it through to do that. Jobs was jumping at one time here in Louisville, Kentucky. Oh, man. You had GE, you had Ford, International Harvester. I could go on and on and on and on if you wanted a decent job. Like right now, the GE has revamped, as you see on television, and they've been advertising the. You can get a job first, second, or third shift. And I hope these young people jump on some of this stuff because the money's back out there. All you got to do is apply yourself and work the job if you get it. Ain't nobody gonna give you anything. You gotta work for it. But it is after that. Mm-hmm.
And so, why did you end up leaving the South End?
We moved. I forget where we moved after that, to stay up to the South End. I forget where we went. We was out there for a long time, though, on Halsey Court. Mm-hmm. And we got there for quite a while. And I forget where we went there. Mm-hmm. We went somewhere.
And so when did you end up separating from your first wife?
The kid was about 2.5 years old, so somewhere in that vicinity, and I stayed divorced, oh Lord, for 6 years, and that's when I ended up going on the road again with Jerry Green, and some people might know that name, and he had a band, and was looking for another guitarist, and I play guitar. And the band was called The Unhooked Generation. And we toured all over the United States with the USO and Bob Hope USO and went to some foreign countries and all over the United States. And so at that particular time, I was just out there playing that music and having a good time. So that's what got me on the music trend. I'm still on the trend of the music trails.
So when you went to these other cities and stuff, did you notice the racial situation or the housing situation? Was it similar to how Louisville is?
Or? Yes. Back during that time, jobs were plentiful all over the United States, in a sense, I should say.
Yeah.
Especially in Detroit. Mm-hmm. The General Motors. Mm-hmm. And they was, oh man, they was, people were living large. They were making good money and buying housing and things of that nature. And that's when they had the white flight, I heard, up in Detroit. Some of the whites didn't want to live where black people were moving in, because we finally made enough money to move in a decent place. And that was called white flight, I was told. But the blacks were making, white people were making money. Everybody was making money and taking care of their families and doing what they needed to be done. Mm-hmm. And it was a miracle to see that kind of stuff, you know.
So when you were on the road, where were you living? Did you have your, where did you keep your stuff?
Which stuff were you planning for?
Did you have an apartment? Or
We was on the road, man. Living in the car, living out the car. We was staying on USO bases. The USO put us up in the housing areas, and that's where we stayed in old barracks, really nice barracks, though. Mm-hmm. Back during that time, we were the house band for several in USO shows and played in the officers' quarters. The officers' quarters had their own house and things of that nature. So we stayed. It was more like being in the military. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like being in the military. And I enjoyed that, too. We stayed everywhere from here to Bangor, Maine. And right now it's so cold in Maine, you won't even want to blow your breath. we toured all over and went to Europe and went to Germany and Japan and they went with the Unhooked Generation, Jerry Green, and he was the band leader. We had the late Irving Gobbs, the drummer, Chris Hale, the late Chris Hale. Oh my God, who is it? David Peoples, and Fred Thomas, the Reverend Dr. Barry Johnson here in Louisville. He was our musical director. John Clay, trumpet. Angelo Lovely, my old buddy, he's still around. He was a young man back then. Well, I guess we all were back then. He's a trumpet player.
So what clubs were around in Louisville would you play?
Back then, they had the, we've always had our little hole in the wall gut bucket club, but we had some better clubs back during those days. Like, I know you've heard of Club Louisville. Mm-hmm. which was on Broadway. It was like a circuit. We called it, it was part of what they called a chilling circuit. Mm-hmm. And that was a name that was given to us basically from white people. Because back during those days, all the clubs that were operating, and to make money, they would sell, of course, alcohol, beer, drinks. But one thing kept them afloat that most clubs didn't have. They sold chillings, Kentucky oranges. So you could go there and get you a big plate of chillings. And man. So that's where the slang chilling circuit came in from. So to play the chilling circuit, when you hit Louisville, you have to play Club La Vie. And then you have to do, after the bigger bands did that, they would come on down and play at the Golden Bell Lounge, which was a bowling alley. Mm-hmm. They changed it to a nightclub. Then you would go on down further town, Club Cherry, actually living in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. Then there was a club called Up Jump the Devil that was in Lexington, and that was a nice little club, too. Everybody, if anybody, played the chilling circuit, and they still do, in a sense. I mean, you know, it's just the way it is across the nation. I've seen everyone from Ike and Tina Turner, from James Brown, all these young cats coming through that. The Parliament Funkadelics, Nightlighters, they were the local band. They was... Yeah. Tough boy, I'm really going to be in the book that you and I are composing.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So many people, just so many. But those were the days.
Yeah, so a lot of the clubs are gone from the black community.
Yeah, so there's nothing there. Even the good hold of walls are disappearing now. Miss Sylvia Arnett just passed. 2 or 3 months ago, maybe, and she had a club, her and her husband, called Seals Lounge. And every musician that came through, like I say, knows about Seals Lounge. But the better clubs are basically gone now, just that. Uh-huh. And I don't think they're bouncing back. I just don't think they're coming back.
Yeah. So, why do you think that is, there's no clubs in West Louisville now? There's a few, what do you think happened?
Well, people are kind of scared to participate in some things now in the street. I mentioned a while ago about the shooting and killings that's going on. Mm-hmm. You've heard about them, you've seen them on TV, you read about it in the newspapers. Times have changed, man. People don't care about each other no more, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. They don't love each other. Mm-hmm. They don't respect each other.
Mm-hmm. So you said you were on the road for 6 years. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to get off the road?
Well, got a little bit old and came on home and wanted to do some other things, and the money wasn't all that great, and like I say, the drug scene was just... We had a opportunity, when I said we, Jerry Green, Barry Johnson, and myself, when we were the unhooked generation. You know, we had played around clubs and toured and went to school and tried to do the right thing. And we ended up cutting some music at a studio. And Mercury Studio, I'm not going to name the person who had something to do with it, I'll just say Mercury Studio. And the producers liked what they heard after a session that we did and wanted to meet with us the next morning at their office. And we did. And we sat there and we talked. And we talked. And the last statement that they said is, yeah, we know, we listened to y'all's session last night. It was great. And we can put y'all on the label and put y'all out and have y'all on the road and traveling here and traveling there. One of the executives said, but you know, there's one thing we want y'all to do for us. The room gets quiet, just like this. We said, well, what do you do? We looked at each other like, what do you want us to do? You know, we green, we young, didn't know what the deal was. What they wanted us to do was bemuse. Now, that expression means when you get through, or before you play the shows in some town, they're going to give you a package to deliver to the program directors, managers of radio stations. Uh-huh. In this package was drugs, cocaine, crack, real good stuff. That's how they used to get it through to towns through their musicians. When they're traveling around, they would all have to stop at the station, drop off a package to old Jim or Larry or da 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 da. And man, we said, nah, let's go back hotel, think about that. We went back to the hotel and packed so quick to get I left a pair of my shoes in the closet there. Because that's not what we was in for, man. We could have did that anyway. But so we blew that opportunity to play for Mercury Records. After we'll tell you the name of the label. And they wasn't what we were trying to do was, you know, be Muse. Because if they'd left us out there, we'd have either been strung out there, dead, or broke.
So then, so you're back in Louisville, what was this, 92, 82, you said?
Yeah, somewhere in the late 80s, I think.
Okay. All right, and so what you do for work? And
we got, they say jobs, press that,
yeah.
So all of us, when we got jobs, or two of them had taken a leave of absence from General Electric, went back to work. You know, I went and got a job. So we just went back to work and continued to play the club, holding the wall clubs that was left.
Yeah.
Here in Louisville back during that time. And that's, you know, until I decided to form a production company, which is called Mr. Wonderful Production, which is still rolling right now. But, you know, we just decided to be local, play music, have a good time, keep your nose clean.
Mm-hmm. So you met your wife. And you decided to buy a house. Was this your first house?
Yes. Yeah, the very first house. I'll get it on my government loan. Mm-hmm. GI loan. Very good thing. You know, the GI loans is like, you go out and find a house. They send their inspectors out, look at the house, and decide whether or not it's worth shooting money, in which they pay it off for you, and you pay them back money. That's how it really works. So I'm just floating along.
So how'd you find the house?
My wife found the house.
Okay.
But I wasn't too hot of them coming to shabby.
Yeah. So what had you heard? Why weren't you too hot? What did you hear?
Well, that was the slang that you've heard, lively, shabby. Uh-huh. That's when they was letting people know that they wasn't too keen on minorities living out here in shabby. You heard about the crosses they burned in people's yards and burned up people's cars. There was no accident. So I didn't want to really get off into that. So I was kind of scared.
So you had heard about this as you were growing up?
Oh, yes, sir. It wasn't no secret. It still ain't. It ain't no secret, so it's not something you just want to, you know, directly put yourself into. So,
So how she convinced you to move to Shively?
I don't know. She just kept on talking about Shabby, brought me out here to see the house. And, you know, nice area, still is. And I gave in. I said, look, we're moving Shabby, but we ain't moving deep in the Shabby.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to run, I can get my gun.
Yeah, because you are really on the edge of Shabby starts, I guess, on the other side of Algonquin.
Yeah.
Parkway.
18th Parkway. Yeah. And that's where Shabby starts. So like I said, I'm at the beginning of Shabby.
Yeah.
So if I got to get on back, I can make it.
Yeah. Well, now Shabby has become a majority African-American community.
Yes, it has today. I now tell people that Shabby is the new West End. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't a long time ago what it is now. I mean, there's more minorities in the chapel right now. We know we have a black male at the particular time. Almost all the council members are black. I think the only one that's white on there is the attorney. All the other 5 or 6 council people on the Shabby Council are African Americans.
And did you ever think that would happen?
No. No, not in my wildest dream. And I'm sure they didn't either.
And why do you think that did happen?
Well, it's just so many minorities here that I guess are voting. Mm. You know, we always preach voting, voting, go vote, vote. Well, somebody voted. Mm-hmm. And they put you in, they put me in, and we just happen to be a minority. So that's what has happened. And yet, like I say, we got our first president in Chambers. She is African American, Miss Burton. Mm-hmm. She's living on the street, matter of fact. She's living down the street here. And, you know, when you get to mass the people, if you got the people that's voting for someone, and they put in who they
come in. But they had to, African Americans had to move into the community to vote for the mayor.
Yes.
So I'm saying, why did you think the African Americans started moving into Shapley in large numbers?
It was a nice area, well kept up. They didn't take no mess. They have information on how they want the city, because I think it's a third-class city, how they want the city to look. They don't want certain things happening there. You have to check with them before you do certain things. You can't just do everything, because before you know it, you got everything.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a nice place to live. Well, it still is. You know, like I said.
Mm-hmm.
Can you stop for a second? Well, the old Dallas Shabby statement came up again. Back during that time, it was just a joke. But everybody was kind of like happy for us to make the move. They knew it was a good place to be. So
yeah.
It was no big thing. Just
when you first moved in, everybody was
like. Now, when we first moved in on the street, I remember very well something I had heard of and had never seen. The neighbor next door was a white lady and her husband. Two or three people down the street. They were white. One night, someone knocked on the door. They didn't knock on the door. I went to the door and I stood some white people with a fruit basket, a wine, and they said, "How you doing? We have a welcoming committee." And I wasn't used to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you never thought that would happen.
No, I didn't think it was going to happen. But they were nice. We let them, you know, come in and they drunk wine and we talked. And they had been checking me out because they seen me come in. I had a police uniform on. At one time, I worked for the Department of Public Safety. You're a police department.
Uh-huh.
And they will see me. I know they saw me.
Okay. And so when did you start working for U of L?
Oh, I wasn't here with that. That was one of the jobs I missed. I couldn't fill it in the thing. I can't say the date right now, but I was at U of L. And what was funny, another part of that that's funny, at the time we had a black Z24 Jaguar. And every time I would get in that car and turn around and pull in the driveway, I had police escort behind me. Police was following me. And I said, "Now, when my wife drove the car, and she said, there ain't nothing wrong with it." I said, "Yeah." So somebody would always follow me home, right to my driveway. And I said, "Okay." And so several times they rolled one down. "How you doing?" "I'm doing all right. We ain't never seen you before." I said, "Oh, let me introduce myself."
So was this Shapley police? Or
it was Shapley.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, they said they didn't know who I was. So I introduced myself. And, you know, I ain't had no problems. I knew what they were doing. They were doing their job.
Uh-huh.
And I was kind of thankful in a sense that they were doing their job. So it was something else, man. Mm-hmm. It was something that I've been through some things, I tell you the truth. But, you know, it's all panning out just.
Yeah. So after you quit your job where you were working, handing out flyers and stuff and kind of working in the community, did you stay involved in the social justice movement?
A little bit. Not as much as I now know that I should have.
Mm-hmm.
I think I got contented.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to get contented.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I wish I had had a call sign. It got bigger and bigger when I left, you know, the Community Action, then I turned into Community Action Agency.
Mm-hmm.
We was out there on First Street back during that time, and that was the headquarters of the building. So, but it was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So, I was thinking outside of Community Action, have you been involved in other things that have gone on?
Well, yes and no. I ended up getting a job with the Youth Detention Services.
Okay.
JCYC.
Mm-hmm.
I worked there. In fact, this is where I retired from. JCYC, Youth Detention Services is the correct name. And working with kids that are, you know, in trouble, and things of that nature. I did that. That was really another story.
Mm-hmm.
And very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, now that there's a lot of efforts going on to revitalize West Louisville, and have you been keeping up on those?
Yes, I have. I'm listening, listening, and seeing, you know, what could become of that and why is it needed to be done anyway.
Mm-hmm.
For good or bad, better or worse, because it's going to be a match.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just hoping that it works out, if it works out at all. I'm looking at the Lulu area, where it was been talking strongly about that. But I'm listening now to the proposals of they're trying to work with black companies, finance them, and doing things up by 4th Street, excuse me, 4th Street Live.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hearing lots of stuff that they're trying to pull some of the companies up there into, you know, revitalization. But that remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how it was hit by the onlookers, which was not our guys and girls who did that stuff, like doing the riot thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm watching, I'm listening, because I know how the people felt and feel about 4th Street.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
we had to watch that. Sometimes when people just want you to give you money to do things, it's a motive behind it.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be the motive that you think it is.
So why is 4th Street important? Like, but
4th Street has always been the playground of Caucasian people. Mm-hmm. That's they call it their 4th Street.
Uh-huh.
You know, back during the time when I can go far back as when Muhammad Ali won the Golden Glove, the championship of the boxing. You've heard the story. He and his entourage went up that way. Walgreens. They wanted to go on Walgreens and get a hamburger. Some did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have the boys who did the boxing thing. And they went in to get something to eat, which is up on 4th Street, around the corner, Walgreens. They were told, we do not serve. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, we don't eat them either. So, but, you know, it was just, 4th Street has always been the playground of Caucasian people in Louisville. 4th Street, that's their baby.
Mm-hmm.
You mess with 4th Street, you know, he's been kind of upset. They're upset there. So I'm looking, I'm listening to see why, well, I know why now they need to refurbish 4th Street. You know, mm-hmm. They need to. Everything up there wasn't destroyed. Windows were broken, they boarded up, stuff like that. But I don't know. I don't see masses of people ever going back to 4th Street shopping heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when 4th Street was just jumping at one time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one time 4th Street was jumping.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, something happened and 4th Street stopped jumping.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're going to try to get 4th Street jumping again. I don't think people are going to come in town, especially some of the Caucasians,
mm-hmm.
and spend their money heavily and feel safe mm-hmm. on 4th Street. I mean, feel safe. I don't think it's going to happen this time. I could be wrong, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's going to happen this time.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that there's a reunion occasionally for people who grew up in Carter Homes in Southwick. And I wonder, have you ever been a part of that?
Yes. I attended 3 Carter Home reunions in Southwick. And it was old times, like old times. It was old times. We've all gotten older. The kids, we were the babies, like I say, the brick babies.
Uh-huh.
And I'm 71 now, but about 4 or 5 years ago. And, there will never be another housing project like Carter Home or Southway. I don't think the government's going to build one.
Uh-huh.
If they got away from that ideal and that style of housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when they tore down those projects
mm-hmm.
and they built the Park Duval housing development there.
Right.
And, part of the reasoning was that it was old and the neighborhood had changed. So, but, there seems to be a lot of people like you who have nostalgia for that community.
Yes. And it was good times. I say again, it was good times. Some of the best times of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, people had pride, man. They had pride in their projects and in their homes. Like I said, the grass stayed cut. People raised flowers. They raised their kids. You know, kids was respectful. And you know, kids want to cuss you out and bring out the winds and stuff like they did. Someone was going to tell you that when you get home, your mama. And that scares you.
Yeah. So did you ever go later when it got rougher in Collar Homes? Did you ever visit, go back and visit?
Yeah. I mean, I was scared. I'm sure it is.
So you were talking about how you would go back to Collar Homes.
Yeah.
In the later... And when you were older, mm-hmm. and that you weren't afraid of anything, and the community, you still had contact with the community and everything.
Right. Yeah. They have something called Carter Home Day every mm-hmm. now and then.
Yeah.
And it's like a festival.
Uh-huh.
And they have a 3-year band. They have food. They have little kids running around, face painting blue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're 10. And a lot of some of the old heads get there and talk to the kids about this and that, and just bring back great memories. So,
well, since Collar Homes is gone now, I know that they've had it in Algonquin Park.
Right, in Russell Park over there. But in fact, I did attend one was in Algonquin. I sure did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, with the Beach of Tourists being redeveloped now. It seems like Park Hill is the last of the old style housing projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I did well. You know, like I said, I grew up in Carter Home.
Yeah, so Park. You didn't know much about Park Hill.
No, I didn't know too much about Park Hill. I didn't even hang.
Uh-huh.
You know, back in those days, you didn't hang in some areas you didn't grow up in. That's one thing that was not allowed unless you had some friends that would let you come on and hang.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't play that, so I kept my butt where I was. I'll just do it.
All right. So, that's all the questions I had. Is there something I didn't ask you about that you think would be interesting? Something to do with housing, or is that?
I hope you do well with the housing aspect. I hope the powers that be put this housing thing in force and. Let's get some good, decent housing for people. We need it in the state of Kentucky and all around in America.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.